Okay, all right. Welcome to some extra podcast interviews on the Rugby Pod with me, Jim Hamilton. I'll be chatting to loads of different people from around the game of ruggers, current players and coaches, former teammates, decision makers, influencers. A big thank you to the Rugby Pod and Spotify for backing me on this. First up, I have one of my best mates, the better half of Team Bramalton, one of the toughest competitors I've ever played with. A guy who sounds Scottish, but actually isn't. It's the inspirational Kelly Brun.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 billion, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Give it up. Yeah.
Big Jim is wearing his heels, marching around the town to get some thrills. But it's time to go in now, and he's big and red. A shot of black cap, and now he's super bad. He gets lost on the beer dick hours. I showed him up some whiskey, and he shoots it's like a ball.
Right, let's go.
Let's go. Here we go, mate.
Count.
Jim.
First one. You
ready? Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I've got no idea what we're doing. In fact, what are we doing?
I actually don't know. I don't know. You know, it's weird, isn't it? Because our careers have gone in different ways,
yep.
Right? And you know me probably better than I know myself, Cal. And I think it's taken a while for me to realise who I am, you know? I'm Jean Valjean.
2, 4, 6, 1.
I've wanted to do this for a while. I've wanted to do my own podcast for a while, along with a load of other stuff.
Yeah.
Coffee, open a bar. What else have I said to you that I want to do? Property.
All sorts of stuff. Yeah. It's a new idea, a new house, a new city every 2 or 3 months.
A new life. But this is my calling.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've had this, what do they call it, imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I've definitely had that in the last 4 or 5 years of us being retired.
Yeah.
And this is it. Not as in like this podcast specifically, but podcasting and talking to people.
Yeah.
It's what I'm comfortable doing. It's what I'm known for. And it's who I am now. So part of this is an add-on from the Rugby Pod.
Yeah.
And the Rugby Pod has given me this new life, as we know, and it's received very well, myself and Goody. I love doing it. But also the Spotify deal has been humbly big for us in terms of not having to, us personally, try and commercialise what we're doing.
Not having to do anything else ever again. So
apart from chatting crap and chatting rugby. So this for me is the evolution in terms of I feel a bit of a responsibility to myself, to the lads that we've played with, and to the game. Not that I'm the voice of rugby. I'm not saying that at all. But there's a lot of shit to sieve through. There's a lot of stuff that's happened since we've retired.
Mm-hmm.
And we're probably, me, you, other people that will get on the podcast are probably best placed to unravel these things from an emotional perspective, but also guys that have lived, breathed, and consumed the game how we have. Do you get what I'm saying with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think what I think is great for you is we've spoken about this before and about the podcast and the Rugby Pod and Jack and Ori Jim and all this sort of stuff. And I remember speaking to you and you said you love doing it, but at times you feel it's a character. And so you're putting on a character. You're not actually, you are being you, but you feel like, you know, you've got to like almost create a persona. and the larger than life sort of character, which you are. But there's also another side to you. I remember speaking to you a lot over the last 2 years when you were in lockdown. Well, all of us were. And you were just saying, I just don't really have any purpose. I don't know what I'm doing. Mm. And that was quite interesting. And probably a lot of people wouldn't think that, because in the pod, you are always this sort of big, sort of larger than life character talking mainly bollocks, but, you know, with a sampling of truth, with a sprinkling of truth in it.
Yeah. And I think part of that has been this imposter syndrome, right? Did you ever think I was going to be in the media? Yes or no? Early days. So when we were talking about retiring from rugby at maybe the age of 29, 30, which is, again, one of the big things that we have to go through, did you think I was going to be in the media?
Early days, no.
No.
No, because you were like from a different background, a bit rough and ready. You said exactly what you thought, and it wasn't always the PC or toeing the line almost. And so originally, no, but then after seeing you do it, and also I think back to the last sort of 2 or 3 years at Sarri's and where you were, unbelievable, was you did so much off the pitch, exploring different avenues and different things to do. And I used to take the piss out of you because you moved house about 400 times in about 3 years, but it's because you were exploring and trying to find the right thing and the right almost fit for you. Mm.
And that's right. And I think even during lockdown, because I think a lot of people were questioning not having control over their life. And I felt the same doing the rugby pod and this caricature. It is me. So for the listeners listening, they all listen to the rugby pod. That is me. But it's not me every day, but it has to be me every day we do the podcast. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like an exaggerated version of yourself.
Yeah.
It is you.
It's a bloody funny version, though, is it not?
It's funny. It's funny. You come up with some...
It's all the truth.
It's very raw. Well, it's not all the truth. It's probably 75% true, and then just a little bit of... A little bit of salt. But it is you. Yes, it is you. But that's you, like, when you're flying and when you're, like, sort of larger than life, you know, you're not always like that.
No.
But as you said on the podcast, it is you on the podcast.
Yeah, it is. And for me, I think I've been blown away with how many people listen to the podcast. And off the back of that, how many people feel like they know me. And that's been a strange process for me to go through and to absorb and to live through with my family. Because like Beck's there, my wife and my kids, and people are throwing out innuendos and stuff that I've apparently said on the podcast.
So you've definitely said it.
So I'm like, basically, have you said that? Like, what's a melted wheelie bin? What are you on about, a bush? What's all this bollocks? I was like, what idiots talk about this? So, but you know what? Like, recently, I've not that the stars have aligned or not that I've had a light bulb moment, but I thought, you know what? Podcasting is who I am now. I've built up this persona. I've built up a platform along with the rugby pod, myself and Goody. I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it to carry on the direction what I want to do. Rugby Pass allowed me to do that from documentaries and content standpoint, but more around interviewing friends from the game, interviewing, you know, people that like watching the game of rugby, but going to tackle some big topics on transition, which in the sense of professional athletes going into the real world, concussion's a big one. We'll talk a bit about that today. The finances in the game, the commerciality of the game. You know, I want to chat to agents. I want to look at people that are investing in the game and the growth of the game that we gave our life to. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Because it's something that we talk about off air and discussions that we've had over beers, over coffee and tea, and over the phone. And they're constant conversations that go on. Before we carry on, people listen to this and be like, right, recognize Kelly Brown. Recognise his voice, Scottish voice, even though you're not Scottish.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But let's just get the elephant out of the room, the name, Kelly. I don't know anyone. I don't know anyone else that is a man that's called Kelly.
Well,
is this a piss take or not?
There's a couple. So there's Kelly Jones, obviously from the Stereophonics.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Lead singer of Stereophonics.
With a Y, Kelly with a Y.
So Kelly with a Y.
Okay.
And there's Kelly Slater, who I believe is a surfer.
Yes, I've heard of him. How have I said that?
Just three unbelievably cool guys, all called Kelly. It's a funny one. I still get it now. You get letters to the house addressed to Miss Kelly Brown, or I'm phoning up, say, yeah, if I've got to phone to sort insurance or something to the phone bill or whatever, anything like this. And they always say, okay, what's the account name? It's Kelly Brown. And is she there? I'm like, well, I'm here. And they're like, what? And then it just and then it throws them off. It depends on how hard I want to push them. Actually, I think it was a bit of a blessing because, well, my dad's Irish, so it's obviously an Irish name. And when I think growing up, whenever you'd go to like sports camps or anywhere like that, and a coach would ask your name, you should tell them, and they wouldn't forget it. It is a bit different, you know. They think, okay, that's Kelly, and he's the one with the stammer and with the massive eyebrows, and so you would tend to stick in people's minds. And so that's where, in saying that, Jim, I was born in Scotland. I lived in Scotland for 27 years. You were not born in Scotland, and you lived in, well, you've probably done a few years now.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're probably, I reckon, around five, you know, with all the moving backwards and forwards. So.
Very true. You know, around the residency and whether or not you should play, obviously the big news recently has been around James Lowe, hasn't it? But it's an interesting one because now you look at the Scotland team and watching some of their games for the Autumn Nations Cup, you had Hamish Watson fronting some of the promos, Ali Price, Duane van der Merwe. None of them had Scottish accents. My point being, like, you are a lucky bugger in many senses because you've got the Scottish accent. So even though you do not have any Scottish blood running through your body, you don't have any Scottish blood, do you?
Well, my ancestry isn't Scottish, no.
No, it's not. But people don't, they go based on the accent, be like, Scottish accent, Scottish.
Scottish, exactly.
So.
Which is correct.
Very true. Very true. You stammer. It's gone.
It's not gone. And I'm very much at pains to stress the fact it's not gone.
But when we do, and we did this before when we did the rugby pod, is it the whole King's Speech thing because you've got the headphones on and we're in a studio, or is it that you're that comfortable with me and being in a studio?
That is a factor, yeah, undoubtedly. But also, it's funny, so I first sort of started to actually do something about my speech in 2010, and I went on this, it's called the Maguire program, and it's basically a stammer run by stammerers for stammerers. And there's a basic cyclist speech, but a massive part of it is around the psychological side and the assertive self-acceptance of it. And that was the bit that sounds easy, but it's the bit that has probably taken me the longest to actually fully grasp. So I went on the course and it came off and I was flying. My speech was unbelievable. I'll never forget, I went into training at Glasgow, and the guy was like, oh my God, you don't stammer anymore. It's fixed, you're cured, blah, 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 all this sort of stuff. And I was quite happy for them to say that. And I was like, yeah. And almost sort of, almost blagged it as I was cured. But then over time, I've come to realize that I will always stammer, and I will only ever be in control of it if I fully accept it. And I've got to that point now where I fully accepted it. I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm not ashamed by it. It's just a part of me. And I'm at pains to stress that I am a stammer, but I know when I do the work that I know I'm in control of it. And also on top of that, I want to challenge myself. So I want to keep on doing as much as I can. So for example, last Friday, I did a BT game. And
well, you were nervous before because
I was nervous. So we spoke about it, and it's something I'd said to the guys at BT. I did an interview about a month before on stammering around International Stammering Awareness Day, and the feedback was amazing from people. You know, people are incredible, and just to get sort of various messages from either people that stammer, or the parents of people that stammer, or the teachers of people that stammer, and just saying, you know, we'll show that to them. It'll inspire them. You know. It was amazing, and it was humbling, you know, to actually get those sorts of messages. And that's why, or it's certainly, it's one of the reasons why I speak out. But on top of that, I want to challenge myself, and I want to prove that I always say I can do whatever I set my mind to. And I say that to my kids. So our youngest, so she's got a stammer and she's 10, and I see it as part of me. I say to her, you can do whatever you want. And so as a consequence of that, I want to challenge myself, and I want to be fully in control of my speech, and I want to see, okay, well, what can I do? Because obviously I coach every day, I've got to speak every single day, but now it's not a challenge that. Whereas going on live TV or doing a podcast or anything like that is a challenge. But I firmly think if I can keep on challenging myself, and I might fail. So we spoke about it. And the first thing that you said to me was like, well, if it goes badly, it doesn't matter. You know, no one's died. I was like, yeah, that's actually a fair point.
That's easy for me to say because I'm normally shit myself before I go live as well. I'm just saying what the little bird on my shoulder is telling me, telling you, but I'm not doing that myself. But it must be harder for you.
Yeah, but it's true. It's true. So no one has died. And something in my old mind, if I have a bit of a blip, I have a bit of a blip. Like, so it's going to be a much bigger thing in my mind than it is going to be in anyone else's mind if I let it be that way. But ultimately, I'm in control of my stammer and my mind, so I'm going to keep on challenging myself. I'm going to keep on pushing myself. I've set a bit of a goal. I'd like to do a bit of co-coms at some point. And it's not necessarily because I'm desperate to be a co-commentator. It's because I want to challenge myself and see if I can get my speech to such a place that I'm in such control of it that I can literally do anything I want.
No, it's class, mate. Do you remember there was a bit of a blip? Do you remember a few years ago we did the old enemy dinner at the Balmoral in Scotland?
Yeah.
And for the listeners...
Absolutely killed it.
Mate, well, killed it is one way of putting it. So for the listeners wondering what the old enemy dinner is in Balmoral, it's basically a load of old people getting together who played back in the 80s and 90s, the England-Scotland game. And we never get invited to these things because the backs were... shite when we played for Scotland. But for some reason, we got invited to this event. So Doddy Weir's hosting as MC, compere, au pair, basically looking after us. David Flatman was on the panel, and they've asked myself, Kelly Brown, Lewis Moody, and a guy called Peter Winterbottom, who played back in the 30s or something.
He was a legend, or he is a legend.
Well, he was a legend. I mean, it was amateur. And I remember we're sat there, and we're shitting ourselves. So we're nervous. And obviously, with your stammer, you need to warm into it. Get a couple of laughs early, and Kelly's like, mate, I'm shitting myself. And I've said to you, don't worry, I'll get up there and I'll warm them up. And so we've got up there. Doddy Weir's like, right, we've got special treat this year. We've got some of the new guard coming in, out with the old, in with the new. Doddy's big thing was around the England game that he never beat England, but he beat Spain. He beat Romania once and the place erupted with laughter. So I'm thinking straight away, I'm thinking, well, Kel, I'm going to warm these fuckers up here in the crowd. And then you can come in with the Kelly Brown, the girl's name, the eyebrows, the stammer, and everything will be good. And we're going to walk out of here as legends. So Doddy gets up there, intros us, and I go up and I'm right, Doddy Weir, thank you very much. Scotland legend. You know, you've got 61 cats for Scotland, Doddy. I've got 63. Doddy, you've never beaten England. I've drawn against them. You've beat Romania once. I've beat them twice and Georgia. And I said, Doddy, you're going to go down as a Scotland legend. Jim Hamilton in the third person is going down as a fucking Hall of Famer. Literally.
Oh, tumbleweed. Shit.
Kel?
Quickly tell the eyebrow story.
And you sped through the eyebrow story, which was meant to sound like...
No, I don't actually know which one it was. It was one of them. There are a few, but
You couldn't get it out this time, could you?
I could. Oh, it was just, as you said, your story, which I've heard... It's funny. It's just some nights when you do these like speeches, after dinner speeches, sometimes you're like, I am hilarious. This is going down so well. So you told me a story as well about one in, it was Norwich, was it? Was it Norwich or something like this?
Big rugby crowd.
A massive rugby crowd.
No idea.
And you went in and did the same stuff and just absolutely died. But yeah, it's sometimes... It just happens. I found that as well. Some nights you're like, oh my God, I'm good. And some nights you're like, oh.
Yeah, that was one of them nights. So I remember when Flatman was looking at me after he'd done the intro to me and you, and it went down like the biggest shit sandwich you've ever heard. And then he's looking at us as in like, have you got anything more? Like, you ain't even looking at him. I'm shaking my head. And then Peter Winterbottom gives this story about how he drank the red wine and didn't pay the bill and put it on Dean Richards' room bill, and he had to pay £74. And the place erupted. And I was like, right, I do not think this is the demographic for us. I don't think the rabbit story from France
or Rabbit Gate.
Rabbit Gate. I don't think that is the right stories to tell in this crowd. So I just said, hopefully it'll be a good game tomorrow. What about Doddy's story as well?
Obviously, as we're doing this, it's just been announced, I think, of the government pledged something like 50 million in funding, yeah, which is amazing. When you think of the amount he's raised, I don't even know what it is, 7 million, 8 million. It's a ludicrous amount, an unbelievable amount. And then to actually get this, you know, to be able to campaign against the government and to get, not against the government, but to be able to campaign to the government and to get them to pledge 50 million in funding is just mind-blowing. Mm. And it's just a testament of the person that he is. Everyone, I've said this before, but everyone loves Doddy Weir. Like, it's just how it is. Everyone loves him, which is why when he has all of the events, everyone wants to support him, wants to help him, wants to raise awareness. And so hopefully with this extra funding, it'll help, obviously, you know, to raise the profile even more and to ultimately find a cure, because that's what it's all about. It's about finding a cure or just finding anything, I think, is there only one drug, and it's been the only drug for 23 years or something that can help in any way. And so Doddy is obviously a legend, like a Melrose legend, a Scottish rugby legend, a Lions legend. But I think after this, how he's going to be remembered is, yes, all those things, but what a legend of a person. You know, he's literally, he has transformed the research into MND, and hopefully we can find a cure and find it fast, and he'll still be with us, you know, for a long, 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 long time yet.
Yeah, I love Doddy, not just for what he's done now, obviously for what he's done now in terms of raising awareness for MND and the way that he's handling the situation that he's going through with such dignity. It's just unbelievable to watch. Let's talk about transition. I hate this word.
Yeah.
Because it's something that we've been speaking about for, I'd say, maybe even 10 years.
Yes, you know it's coming.
Yeah.
Yes, you know it's coming. It's just a question of when. And I think you prepare for it, but you still don't quite know how you're going to react to it.
You know, on the transition stuff,
yeah,
there's a couple of things around it for me. One thing, I don't think I was the player that I could have been because I was constantly thinking about that, if you know what I mean. Even though I played my best rugby at Saracens, yep, because I had this always hanging over me, and because probably the way that my mind works, I can't do two things at once. Just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But that's always looming. There's obviously only certain players that probably don't need to worry too much about that. Because what they say as a rugby player or as an athlete, the minute you start taking your eye off the ball,
yeah,
is the minute you're basically on the way to finishing.
Yeah.
Like, we used to chat about it probably every day. It was on our minds every day, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's on your minds. But I actually saw an interview with Maro the other day, and they were asking him about Eddie Jones's comments and all that sort of stuff about Marcus Smith. And I thought what he said was pretty spot on. And he says, it's not an issue as long as the main thing stays the main thing. Mm. And so if rugby's the main thing, it's got to stay as number one. And so, yes, you can do other things outside, but rugby's got to stay as the number one. I think for me, I think it probably was. I think I was in a sense fortunate in the last sort of 2 or 3 years. And I think about this a bit. So I sort of slowly slipped down the pecking order at Sarries, and I was more than happy, you know, to be that sort of older head who would guide the younger players and that sort of stuff as I transitioned into coaching, because I knew I wanted to be a coach. And then in my last year of playing at Sarries, I coached the academy as well. So I knew that, and I was more than happy to do that. But there is a part of me thinks, should I have, like, so maybe fought a bit harder, like, to not sort of fall down or to not sort of slide down the pecking order. But ultimately, I look back and I think I was an average player, but I worked hard. And so, I genuinely do. And so,
I love how you see your career very differently to how I saw my career.
Yeah. So you were an unbelievable player who just had some bad luck. And that's why you weren't a Lion. And that's why you weren't a Lion. But no, I'm more than happy. So looking back on my career, I had limited talent, but I think I maximized it.
I think for me, it's something, maybe COVID reflection, I never really look back. I'm almost in a bit of denial. One, about my upbringing and how tough that was, but also because I'm emotionally driven. And I remember being at Murrayfield pre-COVID for a Six Nations game. And it was the first time I'd been at the stadium and watched the anthems live out in the stadium. I've been at the stadium before, but I've watched it indoors or whatever we've done corporate. And I found it incredibly emotional.
Yeah.
Because I haven't looked back on my career. Mm-hmm. I've almost like kind of parked it. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. So I don't know whether there should be a part of, not speaking for you,
yeah,
but a part of me that looks back and realizes what I accomplished. I know I joke about it on the rugby pod or whatever, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I genuinely don't look back on it apart from the odd anecdote.
Yeah.
When I think about it and playing for Scotland first and foremost was the proudest thing, yeah, the biggest thing that I ever achieved. But when people say to you, like, what was it like? And there's not as many people that say that now.
Yeah.
But I cannot contextualize what it was like running out in a packed stadium and the feeling of being alive. I can't put it into words.
Yeah.
The feeling of like running out there and you are invincible. Even if you played against the All Blacks, even if you played against Romania. And that's why I don't go back. That's why I don't think about it too much, because I find it, because we're never going to have that again.
Yeah.
We are never going to have that feeling. You know the feeling, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, I get that. I think it's funny because people always say, oh, you look back on that with pride and that sort of stuff, of everything you achieved and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, it was great, but I still, my nature is sort of like, oh, you know, I wish I'd done a bit more. I wish I'd achieved a bit more.
Let's put it out there. So achieve what? So you got 64 caps.
Yeah.
What did I get?
No, that's only 63.
Wow. Captain Scotland.
Yeah.
I was your vice captain. So you see, we're going hand in hand. Yeah. Three European or two?
Two.
And three Prems. And three Prems.
Three Prems, yeah.
Really? And you said yourself, your average
So
above average. So what more was there?
It's funny because I'm saying on one hand, I feel like I maximized my potential. On the other side, I'm saying I would like to have done a bit more. I'd like to have won more for Scotland. I would have.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure that you would feel exactly the same. Like, I see the guys now and it's amazing. They win a lot more often than they lose.
Yeah, we put the foundations
which
in.
I know we did. So we instilled that. Of course we did. And it's great to see them. And also, I always say, you know, for the Scottish fans, to enjoy the highs, you know, you've got to have the lows. And so we gave them all of the lows. So now they're really enjoying these highs as they come. But I would have liked to have won more. I would have loved to have been a Lion. But, I mean, ultimately, I wasn't good enough, but I would have loved to have done that.
That year in 2013.
In 2013, so we finished, was it
third
in the Six Nations? And we thought we had a chance. And ultimately, it's down to one person. It's one person's opinion. And it doesn't mean you're any less of a player. It's just something I would have loved to have done. I wish as well, I never played for the Babas. I would have loved to have played for the Babas. I never got that.
Yeah, I don't know whether your character...
opportunity.
I don't... You need to be a big drinker. You need to be able to chop two or three pints quickly.
Yeah, I can... Yeah.
No?
Yeah, I can do that.
Be honest.
I can do that, come on. I'd have been a great tourist. I've been great tourist. Nah, but I would love to have done that. So there are things, but I also think it's by having that mindset and by wanting more and by being driven, I think it's probably a lot of the reason why I and we achieved what we did, because you've got to be driven and you've got to really want to go for it. But yeah, there's things that I look back and I think, yeah, I wish I'd done a bit more in terms of that. In saying that, I loved all the time I did get. I love playing for Scotland. I would definitely have enjoyed it more if we'd won more. I love playing for Saris. That was it was a turning point for me. It changed a lot of things for me in my life. And it was 2010. It was the same year that I went on the speech programme. So it was a massive year that for me. It changed everything. I loved all my time at the club. And now obviously I'm back at the club. And you speak about the transition and sort of and transitioning out of the game. I probably didn't really go through that until the last year, really, because I was always there, always at the club. So it didn't really change that much. And then I left and went up to Scotland. And it was a change. And Glasgow's a great club. I loved the people there as well. I had a good time there. But my family found it hard so off the pitch, you know, moving during the pandemic. I lived around the corner from you for a short period. And then we went to Glasgow, ended up in an absolute shithole in Glasgow, unfortunately. And it was tough on the family, but I feel in a sense it was good because I actually dealt with the transition and actually sort of moving on from my playing days.
Transitioning from sport to civilian.
Yeah.
you know, superhero to civilian, however you want to look at it. And that's the analogy that I use, right?
Yeah.
As a sports star, man or woman,
yeah,
athlete, it feels like you are superhuman, and you probably are to a degree in terms of like the general public and the experiences that we have and had, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
So it's like you've lost your superpowers. And that's how I felt a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, doing the podcast and doing the media, the outside perspective is fucking hell, Jim smashing it. Well, I don't know whether that is, you know, that's just what I'm thinking from the guy who said to me down the tube station, you're smashing it, love the podcast.
Well, but
it was weird for me, right? So my last game, ironically, was Edinburgh, the European Cup final, 20 seconds, which has turned out to be 20 minutes as the years have gone by. And
so you won the game, didn't you?
Basically came on, turnover. Right. I got blitzed out the back of a mall and I was on my back and I was like, oh my God.
The previous year that you got turned, it was a turnover against Exeter, was it?
Well, there was three in the lead up.
I think there
were two or three. But for you, you stayed in the game. So you stayed around like-minded men, testosterone-fueled men. Mate, I was gone.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. As in from carnage to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was hard at the time, but when I look back, I'm like, that for me was the single most hardest thing, because they talk about what are the kind of key things when you retire that you struggle with, right?
Yeah.
And this is me speaking from my perspective, but also learning from other lads that have retired. So purpose is a big one.
Yeah.
Maybe not number one. Finance is probably number one.
Yeah.
So how do you sustain a six-figure lifestyle?
Yeah.
Right? Ain't easy.
Yeah.
Especially now with the way that the world is, you know, you're not coming out of rugby and people giving you a job. So number one, finance.
Yeah.
And when you come to retirement at 32, 34, 35, a bit older, if you're lucky, you've probably got kids as well.
Yeah.
So you've got more outgoings, you've got a house, you've got kids, and you've lost the bulk of your income.
You're getting paid less, yeah.
We lost all your income, effectively, unless you've got a job. And then purpose is the other one. So who am I?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You go to training. What did your dad do? Oh, he's a rugby player.
Yeah.
He's a legend. He's an athlete. Do you know what I mean? So you have that as well.
Your kids don't describe you as a legend.
JJ thinks I am. JJ thinks I am. He doesn't know. He's 10 now. So he's
done a good job with him. He's actually started.
I've manipulated him. He's gone on YouTube. And the only thing, you know, because he's playing rugby now, he's like, Dad, like any YouTube clips of you playing rugby?
Is it?
That's it. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, but I was hard.
I was hard. My dad was hard. Okay. I won't want to mess with him. You know, so you got the purpose thing, which a lot of people struggle with, like, what are you now? And then the other one is being in the team. So you become so institutionalized. And sometimes that used to annoy me, like Ashy, Wiggy at Sarries, love them, like salt of the earth, but fuck, they used to grate on me sometimes. But I miss them. Yeah. Like, I miss the banter. Yeah. That was the number one thing, because I'm at home with the kids. I love my kids. I love my wife.
Yeah.
But you're there every day. And you actually mentioned it during COVID, where you're at home all the time. We've been doing rugby since we were 16, 17, out in the cold, in the pish wet dune.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're at home sat on the sofa with the kids trying to read books and watch cartoons.
So different. So, yeah. And just argue. Oh God, I used to argue with Lena all the time when you're doing this homeschooling. Oh my God.
We stopped.
Brutal. Brutal. Honestly. I'd literally end up having, like, so bickering with a 10-year-old. But you know the thing I probably struggle with most, and it almost feels pathetic to say it, but planning and making a decision. I'm 39, and a decision about anything, really, because your whole life, like, so I went to school, I was told what to do, what to wear, when. After that, I went to uni, and I was playing rugby alongside it. Again, I'm told what to do, when to do it. After that, I went into professional rugby. I was a player for 13 years and now a coach for 4 years. So my whole life, I've always been given a schedule and given a structure and, okay, do this, even as far as wear this, eat this. And so you don't need to think about anything. And then over this past year, I've had to make some choices and decisions and all this sort of stuff. And I drive my missus insane because she's like, just make a decision. What's easy for you is you've done it your whole life. I honestly have never really had to plan anything or make any decisions. And that's the thing that I've found the hardest. It's just planning ahead. It's trying to, even stupid things like a holiday. Okay, where are we going on holiday? I don't know. Could someone not tell me what to do or where to go? But it sounds unbelievably stupid and so basic. And it really, it's just being a grown-up. because as a rugby player, you're essentially, you're playing a game. And so it almost is like it's extending, you know, your childhood. As you're playing a game, and a game you love, which is amazing to get to do that as a career, but you're essentially playing. And then when you stop, so even going into coaching, it is different. And you've got to be a grown-up and got to build up these skills, which most people have probably got at 24 or 25, and you get to 36, 37, 38, and you're learning these things.
I struggle booking flights and travel. Admin is, as you know, is shocking. I turned up before COVID. I was that busy traveling. I went from Edinburgh to London to the airport, and when I was trying to board the plane in Edinburgh, I'd bought the flight the wrong way around. So I had the flight from London to Edinburgh, and that was the moment where I was like, I need help. I need help to get things in order.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they're mundane things, and food as well. I mean, I look like a shell compared to what I was before. I'd probably eat 5,000 calories. Now I'm like scraping around, like porridge is as nutritious as it gets. I do eat well, I find it hard, like trying to eat well. Anyway, 4 years on.
Yeah.
I'm through, is what I'm trying to say.
It's through your good place.
I am. I'm in a good place.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
We need to chat about more headline stuff, right? Something that we have touched on.
Yeah.
Concussion.
Yeah.
So there's a few instances in games that stick out for me. Mm-hmm. A couple of mine, but I don't really remember them being concussed. Yeah. A couple of them are Alistair Hargreaves, obviously a good mate of mine, ours.
Yeah.
And one that sticks out for me, do you remember the World Cup in 2011?
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember it. We were playing Argentina. We lost the line out. Well, I lost the line out. Albacete steals it.
Yeah.
And did they kick the ball up and you just got absolutely minced?
So they put up, it was either a box kick or it was an exit kick. And I went charging forward. I was in the backfield, you know, as the ball carrier. So I went charging forward and sort of jumped for it. It was pissing it down, wind howling around the cake tin in Wellington. And as I went through, I don't know what happened, but essentially got a whack on either the jaw or the temple. And I wasn't knocked out, but I was definitely...
I thought you were out.
I wasn't out. I had a couple when I was out for a little bit. So Scotland-England 2010 and 2011.
Ugo.
So it was Ugo in 2010. Both of us were gone, so basically head on head. And then he got stretchered off, so they put him on the golf cart. I remember watching it back. I've got no memory of the actual thing. I got up and walked off somewhere. I have no idea how. I have no memory of it. I remember the doctor came on, so James came on, James Robson, who's a brilliant guy, and he came on, and I started calling him Lisa, which was the Glasgow physio. At the time, I was like, I'm fine, Lisa. And he was like, okay, we've got an issue here. And so off I went. And then the following year at Twickenham, it was Banahan. So Matt Banahan, I was coming across in defence. He changed his angle. I went to tackle him and he caught me on the temple again and again. I was down, and that was an interesting one because at that point, so my wife was at home, pretty much due Lena, and it had the spider cam on the pitch, and it was over the top of me, and the spider cam was there, and then it panned up, it zoomed up, and she was obviously, you know, very, very close to giving birth, you know, pretty emotional at that point, and she's like, it was like you died, and that was your soul going up to heaven.
No!
And that's just us. So those are the ones that stick out.
On the rugby pod,
yeah,
during COVID,
yeah,
when more stuff's come out around Steve Thompson, Alex Popper, more recently, Carl Heyman, and a number of others around their suffering now with onset dementia, which is harrowing. I put a tweet out saying we signed up, which was a bit insensitive, really, in hindsight, but I did it before I'd heard or seen their stories.
Yep.
It was when the narrative was building around concussion in rugby and there's a few issues. And then I did a big piece on the podcast talking about it and talking about my experiences. You know, the headline one being when I was a young lad at Leicester and we played against Munster and I've gone to dive on a board and someone volleyed me in the head and I'm snoring on the floor and then there's a count up to 20 seconds. One, two. And I get up on about 20 seconds and there's a big cheer. So my point being, we didn't know what we now know back then. We've both played in games where we've been concussed and you wobble back into the line and there's almost like a bit of a guy, you're showing a bit of grunt, you're showing a bit of heart and stupidity in hindsight. My point being is no one's really talking about it now from what I'm hearing, lads that have played the game, and it does feel split. I've got mates, and you'll know them, you've got mates that are probably involved in this situation with lawyers and they've got this worry, I imagine. Yep. They've got a resentment to the game and they're going to go down the route which... There's two parts to it. One bit I don't like is the fact that I got approached, I'm not going to say by who, to testify against rugby and bring a lawyer. And then there'll be a pyramid kind of retainer model. So, for example, I testify, right? Jim Hamilton, I'm struggling now with concussion, you know, dementia issues. And then I go and speak to you and be like, Kel, actually, there's a bit of money to be had here.
Yeah.
Speak to my guy. And then you go speak to him. And then if you get any money off the back of it, I get a bit of it. And then if you pass on anyone else, like John Barkley, then you'll get a bit of John Barkley's and I'll get a bit of yours. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? So there's an opportunist play, I feel, on some part of it. But then there is the authentic fucking worrying part to all this, which is what I want to talk about. Because I feel now, with the platform that we've got, a responsibility to bring this to light, try and unravel how it looks. And again, I'm emotionally driven, right? I'm not an academic. Mm-hmm. I ain't the smartest cookie. Do you know what I mean? I'm happy to learn and have these discussions. And I don't know if you saw on social media that Alex Popham, a year after I put a tweet out discussing the concussion elements to my tweet and the podcast.
Yeah.
He like put like, I don't know, it was like an aubergine or something like that, but basically sort of something derogatory. And I messaged him and said, look, I'm happy to chat either personally or on a podcast and go through your experiences. And when people listen to me talk about it, and this is what drives me mad, and this is why I want to talk about the podcast. Yeah. So if I put a tweet out about it, right, the message is coming back. Oh, the game's gone soft. That's what you're trying to say. What about these people's families? What about this? I'm one of them. Like this is the mental thing. Like, and I've got dementia in my family. Like my nan, who died of COVID, but she had dementia. My granddad died of dementia. Fucking, I played concussed for 6 months, and I got knocked out a number of times. Like, who are these people to be calling me out, saying that, saying like you're not well placed to talk about it? What are you on about? The game's going soft. They're calling me out. I think we have a responsibility, you as a coach, now bringing these young lads through, and how we manage that. So my question is, are you worried? You don't need to be worried. It's not a thing where, as in I'm trying to open you up. No, like, you'll have your journey, I'll have mine.
No, I don't think I am. And it's, I think each person's got their own journey and their own experiences. And I will say, if anyone has, has been forced to play with concussion, then that's not a good thing. That is not a good thing. And there is an issue there. In terms of the head knocks I got, I think back to, it was my second last game for Scotland and we played against Wales in Cardiff and I got my bell rung. I got a whack. It was just a little bit fuzzy and then it cleared. And Dr. Robson came on. He checked. He said, are you all right? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. And he made the call. No, he's not good. He said, a head knock here has got to come off. And I remember being on the pitch and actually arguing with him, saying, listen, I'm completely fine. And James was like, no, you're coming off. And he was right to do that. I spoke to him about this about 6 months ago. And I would still say now, I'd say, listen, I was fine to carry on. But James, all he cared about was me and my health. And so it's the right decision for him. And I think if medics now, which I believe they are being unbelievably strict on it. If there's any suspicion that someone's got a head knock, they've got to come off. Because as players, you're just kind of programmed. Well, either you're programmed just to carry on or you want to carry on. But I think it's absolutely right now that medics have got a zero tolerance approach. I think it's right that now to come back from concussions, there's sort of various stages that you've got to pass to get back.
Do you think it's long enough? Here's one for you.
So it's changed this season, actually.
Oh, has it? Go on then, just talk us through
that. It's changed this season. I'm not exactly sure how, but I think it takes a little bit longer now, certainly for younger players and certainly for players in the community game. It takes a lot longer and you've got to see a specialist, which I think is a good thing because ultimately we don't know. We don't know the long-term consequences yet.
We're effectively waiting now. That's what it feels like a little bit. Then that's maybe the scary thing.
I said, I don't know any of these guys' stories, so I can't comment. And if they have been badly treated or whatever, then that isn't right. But everyone's got a different story, don't they? And I just think looking now with the evidence that is been made, is the game has been made as safe as it possibly can be. And that's how it should be. You know, you've got to look after the players and look after the players' health, not just whilst they're playing, but also in the long term. And I think the game absolutely is doing that.
How hard do you think it is for the players now? I try and think back on my career and if I would have tried to hide things in order to get a contract. So an example being, right, you've got a young lad coming through, 19 years old. He's on the pathway to greatness. Yep. Marcus Smith gets a concussion and gets stood down through no desire or want of himself, but because that is the necessary steps to take to look after him. But how difficult is it to manage these young lads coming through, I'm fine, or on the flip side of that, I'm not fine.
Yeah.
And then a year down the line, he's out of contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, well, you've not given me the chance to play as a medical team. Or he says, I'm not right to play. Like, how hard is it migrating through this now with the young lads coming through?
I think all you can do is follow the guidelines. And that's what the medics do, is they follow the guidelines. And that's all you can do.
Yeah, but with contracts and stuff like that.
I get that.
When someone's injury prone,
you
wouldn't get signed. So if I kept wrecking money, I ain't getting signed by a club, am I? If you've got a number of concussions, surely that has to be taken into account, does it not?
Well, it's probably a factor, yes. Yes, it probably is a factor, and I get that. But we've got to, as clubs, we've got to follow what the experts are saying. And if the experts are saying this person's fine to play, then they play. If the experts are saying that this person isn't fine to play, then that person shouldn't play, no matter how much the club or the person themselves want to play, because the clubs and the game has got a duty of care to its players. And it's absolutely right it's like that. And as I said, so a lot of these guys, I don't know, I've not spoken to any of them or anyone that's involved in any of these.
Have you been
things.
Approached?
No.
You haven't?
No, I've never been approached. And so I don't know what their story is, you know, what their experiences are. And if their experiences are bad, if they've been forced to play, you know, whatever, then that's not right. But it's very difficult to comment on each individual player if I don't know their full story and their experiences. I don't think I'm in a place to comment.
Yeah, because I battle with being a dad with two boys, having played a game that has given me everything.
Yeah.
Not from a financial standpoint, which it has, but from a life style, a grounding,
yeah,
a foundation, everything,
yeah,
who I am. I wouldn't be the person, yeah, I am if it wasn't for rugby. Yeah, I find myself second guessing how much I push the boys into rugby, knowing how good the game is and the values of the game.
Yeah, but I think you weigh up, you know, the benefits and the risks. And for me, I mean, even 3 days ago, so my daughter was playing netball at school, fell over, broke her arm.
I cannot believe that picture.
Like, yeah, it's pretty messy. Her arm was bent and it was horrible, but it was an accident. Like, it was no one's fault. It was an accident. And she picked up an injury. When she's back fit, will I be encouraging her to play netball again? Absolutely, because team sport, and I think the benefits of team sport far outweigh any negative, any risk. Because in life, there's risk. Like, in life, in anything, it carries risk. But if the benefits outweigh it, then I think you go with that. And that's the same in rugby. Rugby, as any sport does, it's got risk. Yes, it does. But I firmly believe the benefit and the values and the lessons and the everything around the game is so much more than any perceived risk in the game.
Because one thing that I want to delve deeper into, I've got a couple of mates who played in the championship, and I look at the journey that I had in the career and the World Cup and the experiences and winning European Cups and premierships and traveling the world and making a bloody decent living. And then I look at my mates who played in the championship, same age as me.
Yeah.
I'm going to get him on. And his body is absolutely fucked. As in, it's ridiculous to look at the body and see what he's done. Detached both his biceps. I think one of his pecs is detached as well. His knees are wrecked. And there was Ben Gulliver.
All right, okay.
We grew up together playing. So I'm going to get him on and chat about it because...
He's at Bedford, is he not?
Well, he was at Bedford, Amptall, Plymouth, Cov. Yeah.
Okay.
And I wonder whether he feels the same now he's retired.
Yeah.
And I know he did it. But what I'm trying to say is that is the masses of people that play rugby in terms of they don't get the experiences that we had. And we're sat here on the platform talking about the risks and whether or not we encourage our kids to play, whether or not I'm going to push my boys or girls in the direction of playing rugby, because the likelihood is they're not going to have the career that I've had, because very few do through chance, luck, whatever, timing. And whether or not being in a team sport like rugby, maybe making 35 grand a year and having to play 40 games in the champ with one physio and one doctor is worth it. But Kelly, look, could have gone all day.
Yeah, could have just chatted all day.
It's an hour odd. Kelly nice. Brown, friend of the show, but also one of my good friends.
Thanks,
inspiration
mate.
To many. And we're watching the coaching career grow. Pitch side for Saracens, BT Sport. You're doing a bit of everything.
Thank
a bit of singing still.
Yeah, dabbling. Dabbling. But yeah, thank you very much for having me on. I'm sure it's going to be a big success. And you found your thing.
Unsure. We'll see.
Oh, well, you stick out a few episodes.
Yeah, we'll try a few. Put a few. We'll probably change
see
your mind.
What happens and you move again. You know, you do something else.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah, there it is. Video. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.